Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. I can celebrate a little anniversary this week. Exactly 5 years ago, late November 2020, I was starting my podcasting activities. And as you may remember, 2020, that was a pretty uncertain times. That was right in the middle of the corona pandemic, and business slowed down, and I made the decision to try this kind of marketing, this new way of communication called podcasting. And I didn't regret a single moment. I totally love to record these episodes. I started with the German version. Then I added the English version. The first couple of months, it was a weekly activity. I realized that this was a little too much load on my desk. And so I decided to make it more or less bi-weekly. And this is where we're still today. I have gained a small but excellent and dedicated audience. So if you are listening to this, you will be part of it. I reach exactly those people that I want to reach. When I'm at a conference, many people approach me and say, "Hey, Dr. Peter, I love your podcast and I learned so much from this." And okay, this is exactly what I want with this. I want to spread my knowledge, I want to spread my word, and I want to reach the people that are into HMI, that are into human-machine interactions, that want to think, that want to listen, and that want to talk about how humans and technology relate. I was awarded by the portal Million Podcasts with my German podcast. I am number 10 of all technology podcasts in Germany, and I am number 13 with the German version of all UX UI podcasts worldwide, and I'm the best one which is not in English with that one. And lucky as you are, you can have it in English as well. So yeah, this was a little glimpse into the past. I have this 5 years anniversary here, and I'm pretty proud of this. Put a lot of work into it, and let me know your thoughts about the podcast. What can I do to make it even better? I will not change things dramatically in the near future, foreseeable future. I will keep the bi-weekly rhythm. I will keep the format basically solo episodes. I'm talking about this. And so at the end of the day, thanks for listening and thanks for sticking with me over the past 5 years. Still, today, I want to look into the future. Three things that currently concern me in the area of automotive HMIs. Three questions, three major HMI questions that will, from my point of view, define the future and what we need to ask and to answer them now. If you had asked me 15 years ago, is there a future in automotive HMI design? I would have probably said, well, not really, I'm not sure. I don't know. So that was a time when we had these 6, 7, 8 inch displays in cars with a small display in the cluster. We had still a lot of hard keys in the cars. And my idea was, okay, this is very well developed. This is matured. There is not so much exciting new stuff to do, whether it's in red or in blue, or whether the display has 6, 7, 8, or 10 inches, whether we have 5, 6, or 7 logos on the starting page. That is not really a game changer. Today, I see it totally different. The world of human-machine interaction, human-machine interfaces is at a turning point. Basically, three things. Automation is deeply transforming the relationship between driver and vehicle. Artificial intelligence is changing the way we think about and develop interfaces. And Chinese HMIs raise the question of how technology from a different cultural sphere is understood, or probably not understood, in Europe and the US. So in this episode, I explore three major HMI challenges that will keep us busy in the coming years. Number one, how is automation changing the HMI? We are moving from responsibility sharing to situation awareness and the loss of competence. Number two, how will artificial intelligence make HMIs more adaptive, functional, and a little more like a side thing, radically change the way we develop HMIs? And number three, how can we meaningfully translate Chinese HMIs for European and US users, going beyond language and color? I will raise many questions. Many people tell me after my keynote, say, hey, you are raising questions, you don't answer them. Now, sometimes I answer them, and yes, it's my job as a inspirator, as a keynote speaker, as a podcaster, to raise the questions, to make you think. And I'm raising the questions here, and some of them I can answer today. Many others can only be clarified in concrete projects together with real users, real vehicles, real data. So if you or your team, if you're facing similar issues, similar questions, if you're developing new HMI concepts, planning a European US UX redesign, or you want to integrate artificial intelligence into your cockpits in a meaningful way, feel free to contact me. Send me a mail, contact me on LinkedIn, give me a phone call. Whatever way you prefer, feel free to contact me. And then we can set up the right projects, we can find the right answers, and we can move your technology up to the next level. Let's start with the first part, automation. How does automation change HMI? The automotive industry has made massive progress in automation over the past decades. We have automated ignition timing. We have automated gearboxes. We have automated headlight controls. We have established a high beam assistant. And all of these were technical innovations, noticeable, but peripheral compared to what we do now. We are entering a new chapter in automation. We automate the core driving task. Now, with this automation of the driving task, we're interfering with the very core of the relationship between human and machine, between car and driver. So we're not talking about comfort anymore. It is about control. And as soon as control is shared, the HMI becomes the critical interface. For me, this is exactly where one of the biggest HMI challenges of the next, let's say, 3 to 5 years is anchored. Let's make a step backwards. I will talk about different levels of automation. I will talk about level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And what do these levels mean? And they're based on the SAE level, the Society of Automotive Engineers, a US American organization. And there are different definitions of these levels out there. There are the German BUST has one, and I think single countries have them. As it turned out in the past years, the SAE definition is the one that is accepted widely in the automotive industry. And so everybody, when you talk about level two automation, everybody in the automotive industry will know what this means. Even popular magazines, car magazines, use these, at least in Germany. And so it is a seems to be like a common standard. And SAE defined six different levels of automation. And there are the two edge cases, the two extremes. The one is level zero, basically meaning zero automation of the driving task. Everything is done by the driver. And the other end of the scale is level five, and everything is up to the vehicle. Yeah, so the car is fully self-driving. No interference with the driver is required. And we have these automated cars in cities like Los Angeles or Atlanta, Georgia, like even in Las Vegas. We're having or will have very soon fully automated cars where they're fully self-driving. No interference with the driver is required. And that, at the end of the day, resembles the HMI problem to that one. What do you have in a train? What do you have in an airplane? And an automotive conference, I've been asked after my keynote, what is automated driving for? Who really needs this? And my idea is, we will not have it in private cars so soon. We will have it whenever we can replace a driver, when we can replace a paid human, a professional driver with a computer. Basically for two reasons. One is we have a driver shortage. We do not have, even on a global basis, we do not have enough drivers. We do not have enough people that are ready to drive around with a car as a job. And if you can see it, these robo-taxis or these full self-driving cars, they are replacing taxi drivers. Yeah, and you don't need to pay them anymore. Now, that's the second reason. The first reason is we don't have enough. And second is they want to be paid. Of course, they're humans. Yeah, and they have the right to be paid for driving around. And so these robot taxis, so you can replace taxi drivers. And then there are a couple of field studies in the south of the United States that are replacing truck drivers. We have fully self-driving trucks. They are not 100% fully self-driving. They are fully self-driving on highways. So theoretically, it's more level four than a level five, because in inner city areas, the last mile is usually done with a human driver. But again, here you are replacing a long-haul truck driver. You're replacing a human. With the private cars, the cars that I own, the cars that you own, we won't see so much. We won't see level five full progress in the near future. We will see more and more functions that are automated, like self-parking, highway driving, all these things, little by little, will come, and they will merge into each other's. Yeah? They will get closer to each other's, and then we will have some kind of level three, four. Automated driving. So we have talked about level zero and level five. The problematic levels are the ones in between. This is where the driving task is shared, where some parts of the driving task are performed by the rolling robot and some are performed by the human. And this is exactly the critical area from an HMI perspective. Let's run through these three levels, 2, 3, and 4. Level 2 systems are widely used today. Longitudinal and lateral control are performed by the vehicle under certain circumstances in certain driving areas. Usually it's on highways, on autobahns, where they work very well. And there are driver assistance systems. So it's like lane keeping systems, automatic cruise controls. They are combining these maybe with a couple of comfort functions, traffic sign recognition. So the car is driving in certain situations, under certain circumstances, in certain conditions by itself. But, and this is the characteristics of level two, the driver remains responsible. And this is where the central question arises. So we need to show in a car who is doing what at the moment and what will change in the next 3 to 5, maybe 10 seconds. I remember in the past we had very few small icons on the instrument cluster. They were neither understandable nor helpful. A couple of years ago I had a German high-end SUV to travel in the southwest of the United States. And I drove about 1,000 miles, 1,600 kilometers. And I did not realize, not even at the end, what this little icon meant and what does it mean when it's red, when it's yellow, when it's green, that was somehow connected to the automation of the driving task. Today, manufacturers dedicate entire areas and digital clusters to visualize the distribution of the driving task, which is okay. It's better than this little icon, but the process is the progress is not to the full end. It's not really, it's not full usability. It's not full user experience. It remains somehow inadequate. Many drivers do not understand when the system takes over, when it disengages, why it does it, when and how they must intervene. So for me, solving this HMI question at level 2 is the biggest challenge of the next 3 to 5 years we have, because without a clear understanding of system limits, no trust is created. We need to communicate the limits of the system to the driver, and if we do not, we will create high levels of distrust. On level 3. Level 3 is basically level 2. Under certain conditions, the car is driving by itself. But the driver is allowed to leave the control loop. So if you have a level 3 driving car and you are under the conditions where it is allowed to be on level 3, then you can take your smartphone and check your mails. You can read a book. You can pull out your laptop and work on the slides for the next client meeting. Whatever. You can do that. Sounds attractive, but leads to a massive problem. Resuming the driving task needs to be in a short time. And the common understanding in the automotive industry is this short time for a takeover on level 3 is between 3 and 5, maximum 10 seconds. We have a phenomenon called situation awareness. Basically answering the question, who is where around me? Who is moving in which direction and how? And how will the situation change in the next seconds? And additionally, we need to clarify, what is the problem? Yeah, the car was driving for itself in the past 15 minutes, and now suddenly something rings, something beeps, and I need to take over. And studies, very well done, very well designed studies by automotive OEMs, they indicate that it needs up to 120 seconds, usually between 20, 30, maybe 60 seconds, but in very complex traffic situations, 120 seconds for the driver to gain back full situational awareness. Yeah, so the system suddenly hands back the control. The driver is often too far away, engaged in tasks that are not driving related. And so in this situation, the HMI must therefore do what human attention cannot do. Yeah, compress complex traffic dynamics and make them understandable within seconds. We have this 3 to 10 seconds, and it takes maybe up to 120 seconds to build this, and we have to fill this gap. And this, for me, is the central challenge. Yeah, how do we represent the traffic scene? How do we represent the entire situation so that the driver does not have to interpret, but immediately understands which warning channels are suitable? What does a handover look like that creates trust instead of stress? We will not have to at the moment, I don't see any convincing solution here. Yeah, and from my point of view, many OEMs underestimate this issue. So this seems to be a very, very big point here. And I don't want to talk about if we have a car that has level 2 and level 3. How do we differ then? How do we indicate that a driver is allowed to leave the control loop, or that the driver is not allowed to leave the control loop? Yeah, so all these are unanswered questions, and I don't have a single one solution. Yeah, when a colleague from a big automaker asked me, what is the solution? Tell me, you're talking about the problem. I don't have a solution right now, right here. But I see that we as an industry, we as automotive HMI designers, we need to work on this one and find the right solutions. And as I said, I will help you with this. We can move on together. Let's move on to level 4, when the human becomes just the emergency driver. Level 4 creates a paradoxical situation. The driver is barely active. You can drive over weeks and months without interacting with the car. When the driver is needed in extreme situations, because the system reached some kind of limit, a camera fails, there is ice, dust, dirt on the camera, some sensors fail, the computer fails, whatever. Yeah, these are situations when the driver needs to take over. And the driver may be inexperienced because they have not been driving for quite some time because the car was doing all the things. And so the HMI faces a completely new task. It must compensate for the loss of competence driver's experience. So how do you bring an inexperienced person to a competence level within seconds that once required years of routine? How do we visualize the nature of the problem in a way that is intuitively understood by everyone? How do we help the driver to make the right decisions in a situation they can no longer fully grasp? And this will be one of the biggest cognitive and design challenges of the coming, let's say, decade. So to bring this down to the point, we have not just automating functions, we are automating the driving responsibility at the moment. And as soon as responsibility is shared, we need radically new HMI solutions that make responsibility visible, that restore situation awareness, that compensate for a loss of competence, and that create trust in automation. So automation is no longer only a technical issue. It's an HMI psychology human factors challenge that we have. Let's move on to artificial intelligence. How does artificial intelligence change human-machine interfaces in cars? And hardly any new technology, I mean, it's a buzzword, but that transforms HMI. So HMI changes interaction structures, design processes, and even the self-understanding of the machine, the entire interaction. So again, we are here at a turning point. From a static interaction concept to HMIs that learn, understand, and co-design. So there are three major HMI areas that AI, artificial intelligence, will shift radically. The adaptions of the HMI, number one. Number two, the AI-based HMI functions. And number three, a bit as a sidekick, AI as a development tool. Let's start with the adaption of the HMI. Until now, one basic principle of interaction is applied, whether it's good or not, but it's applied, and the human adapts to the machine. We learn it. Yeah? We as designers define menus, layouts, structures, and we expect users to learn them, to interact with them. An AI reverses this logic. Suddenly the system can detect context of use, It can distinguish work, leisure, and driving situations. It can evaluate preferences and routines and reflect them in the HMI. It can interpret user areas and, again, learn from that and redesign the HMI. And I think in a foreseeable time frame, we will even see integration of emotional states into the HMI. So an AI-adapted HMI means graphics that adapt, functions that appear or disappear depending on the context, interaction path that becomes shorter. If I have always the same routine when I get into a car, this routine will one day be reflected in my HMI. And multimodal outputs that are weighted depending on the driving situation. If I drive at night into a city I've never been to, probably giving me visual inputs is not the best thing you can do. So the mode will change from visual to auditory. So I will get more text and less graphics to do this. So the HMI becomes fluid. And the boundary between interface and intelligent blurs. So tiles, menus, and widgets become dynamic. The user interface is no longer designed as we know it today. It is shaped by logic, data, experiences, learning patterns. And the potential is enormous, but so are the risks. And an AI-adapted interface can feel unpredictable. There was a menu point. It was there yesterday. It's gone. Where is it? Yeah, it can undermine trust and unintentionally create complexity. So the big challenge here is how much adaptation is good and how much is too much. Where is the sweet spot? And how do we explain AI decisions in the HMI? How do we communicate, hey, I have changed. It's new, it's fresh, it's adapted, it's better for you. How can we do that? AI-based HMI functions. We're talking about new capabilities that simply did not exist before, could not exist before. So what can an HMI do for the first time thanks to AI? Some functions would be impossible without the HMI. Natural languages interfaces based on HMI. Yeah, instead of voice commands, establishing a real dialogue. Predictive interaction. Yeah, the anticipation of user intentions. My car learns that whenever I get into the car in the morning, I want to listen to a heavy metal playlist and I want to have 20 degrees centigrade in my car and so on and so on. And it anticipates that. Attention, cognitive load estimation. Yeah? This will be a high cognitive load situation. I need to reduce the information I'm transferring to the driver. Emotional recognition, facial expressions, voice interpretations. Interpretation of sensor data for situation analysis, hyper-personalization. Yeah, music, climate, seating, navigation, all that can be personalized or in the future, hyper-personalized. Risk prediction. Yeah, that not only detects but interprets. A child could appear behind the parked car. Be careful. And all these systems, all these functions dramatically expand HMI capabilities. They not only make it smarter, they change the character of driving. And the crucial point is AI expands the HMI functionality, but not incrementally, not step by step, but categorically. Drastic from one day to the other. What used to be a display becomes a dialogue. What used to be an alert becomes a recommendation. And what used to be do this becomes I'll take care of this. Thus, the role of the driver changes. Drivers become more like a partner of the machine and a supervisor. And the challenge we are facing here, how do we design that these new systems are neither patronize nor manipulate nor overwhelm, but help, relieve, and build trust. This is the core challenge that we face when we integrate AI functionality into automotive human machine interfaces. And number three on artificial intelligence, the development of HMIs. The third focus area here is AI not only changes HMIs, but it changes the development process. So we are in the beginning of a phase in which developers, designers, usability engineers, and OEMs need new tools and processes. Generative HMI designs. AI proposes interaction paths, UI layouts, color concepts. I have seen that in one of the big tool producers. They have added an AI engine to their tool, and you just type in what you want, and then it gives you an output. Automated prototyping. Yeah, from a prompt to a driver prototype in a couple of minutes instead of weeks or months, as is it today. AI-based usability tests, simulation of user behavior, error paths, gaze patterns, all that predicting based on existing data. And AI-assisted requirements engineering. Automated consolidation, linking, verification of requirements. All this will be part of future HMI developments. And this means the classic design, review, test, iterate model needs to be redefined. Iterations become faster, more precise, and more data-driven. And the central change is a cultural change. AI professionals delivering quality and democratizing. So AI makes it easier to create a professional quality HMI. It democratizes creativity. It dissolves silos and makes the HMI development a collaborative dialogue between a human and a computer. The big question is, how do we ensure that AI-generated interfaces are not only efficient, but also understandable, fun to use, and brain consistent? So AI is not a feature, it's a paradigm shift. Interaction shifts from static to adaptive, the functionality from assessive to anticipatory, and the development shifts from handcrafted to generated. And these three axes do not only change what HMIs look like, they change the HMI DNA itself. Let's move on to the final part of this episode. How do we make Chinese HMIs, let's say Western, European, US, adapted? I have spent the past years intensely studying Chinese vehicles at the CES, at the car HMI, and on many test drives. But especially memorable was my visit to the AAA this September, where I carefully examined dozens of Chinese cockpits and HMIs. My impression was pretty clear. Chinese HMIs are impressive. They can be impressive. Some of them are awful. Some of them are oppressive. Technically strong, visually okay-ish, often, or mostly, almost always, full of features. But they only partially suitable for European and US markets. Because they are consistently built for a different cultural context. And culture determines how people perceive, understand, interact with technology. And this is exactly one of the most underestimated challenges in the entire HMI field begins. Chinese HMIs follow a different logic. They are feature-rich, they're very often overloaded, they have dense layouts, large displays with content in every corner, the integrations of gaming, e-commerce, social media elements, prioritization of feature visibility over a calm, ordered, and cognitive relief. For the Chinese markets, this makes sense. European and US users have a different approach. They think and they work differently. Europeans and US Americans expect visual calm, particularly we Germans, we are very much into having it calm. Expectations regarding safety and distraction reduction are higher in the Western markets. Trust arises through clarity, and not feature overload. Western drivers want technology as guides and not to be overwhelmed by this. So there's no better or worse. It's simply different. And this is precisely why we must discuss how to make Chinese HMIs European/US American. Without losing this technological strength, I don't want to talk about that, just about adapting it to European habits. And there are four levels of intercultural HMI adaption. And we should talk about all these levels in brief. So language. Translation is very often not the problem. Some of the HMIs had awful translations, but that shall not be the problem. It's more the semantics. Yeah, it's the obvious level, but even correct translations are often insufficient. Words like pilot, like assist, like smart, like mode have cultural interpretations. They mean different things in different parts of the world. And safety terms must be exact. Otherwise, they will fail. And icon designs, yeah, they carry meanings that differ culturally. So there are certain things that we in the Western world take as totally natural that are unknown in the Asian world, the Chinese world, and vice versa. So a mistranslated button or a menu entry is not only unclear, it can be unsafe. Second level, the design, the layout, the density, the rhythm of the UI. So culture, design is culture in form. I don't know who said it, but I like this statement. Design is culture in form. Chinese HMI follow different aesthetic and functional rhythms. In China, they have more information per screen, higher interaction speed, game-like visuals, bolder animations, color codings that trigger different associations as in Europe. And European US users usually prefer minimalism, structure, hierarchy, visual calm, prioritization based on safety and comfort, and little content per interaction step. So a Western HMI breathes differently. It's more reserved, more structured, and more cautious. Number three, third level, taste and preferences. What do users want and what do they reject? So taste is not random, it's culturally shaped. Examples, in Europe, matte colors and muted tones and few animations are seen as luxury. In China, it's more stronger colors, more dynamics, and more vibrant visuals. So functional priorities also vary. In China, entertainment is the dominant in-car factor. In Europe, it's the driving task plus safety that are in the forefront. And European users and parts also US users are more cautious toward experimental UIs. Chinese users tolerate higher complexity as long as they get more features. So even in a functionality identical HMI, culture must be recurated. And number four, level four, cultural determinants. How a society understands technology. This is the deepest and most important level. Culture determines how people interpret authority, how they perceive risk, how they handle risk, how they expect safety, how they build trust, how they communicate with technology. Some differences. In China, some examples. In China, technology is a factor of optimism. Technology is always good, it's always better than before, it's always moving forward. So innovation always means progress. In Europe, technology is ambivalent. Innovation generates fascination and skepticism. And the US is somewhere in the middle between these two. European users want to know why a system does something. Chinese users are more likely to accept that the system does something. And in China, the car is part of a digital ecosystem. In Europe, it's a safety-critical device with a strong emotional significance. Now, these are just some drastic differences in culture. the expectations for HMI change fundamentally, not only in language design, but in structure, responsibility, and in actions, interaction style. So what does this mean for Chinese OEMs? And guys from China, listen up now. A Chinese OEM who wants to succeed in Europe must go far beyond localization. It is not about different colors, different fonts, different icons, slightly reduced menus. It's about a different HMI philosophy, a different prioritization of safety versus entertainment, a different understanding of visual calm, culturally appropriate interaction design, and a different story about trust, risk, and responsibility. To bring it down to a point, a European HMI is not a translated Chinese one, it's a newly conceived one. All right, so far on the cross-cultural aspects. That brings me to the end of this episode. So, automation changes the responsibility, the task sharing between car and driver. AI changes the interaction and the development of HMIs. And Chinese HMIs confront us with fundamental cultural questions. And these three topics shape the future of the automotive user interface, technically, psychologically, and strategically. We are only at the beginning, and many answers still need to be developed together. If, saying that again, you recognize these challenges in your company, or you have a concrete HMI questions, talk to me. The future of HMI is not observed, it is shaped in a common activity. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time. Take care and stay healthy.